Oh yeah, let's get up for Foo Fighters, PJ and the band, man. You know that line in that song that talks about how, we fight for our lives. Why do we fight for our lives? Because everything's on the line. And that really is what we're going after in this journey, the I Am journey, because the more and more we understand who we're created to be, the sweeter and better life is. So, we're really excited you're here for week 3 of the journey. My name's Kurt, if we haven't had a chance to meet. And, this past week, as you were doing your individual guide work in the app, we took a look at a place. You're asked to look at a place in your life where you could look around and you could observe in that space, and someone else in that space would figure something else out about you. And so this is that space for me right here. I couldn't bring you to my garage. That wouldn't quite work. So I decided to bring part of my garage to you. These are some of the things I work on in my garage. In fact, this is a snowmobile that my son and I have been restoring for the last year. We've tore this whole thing apart. The engine out, we rebuilt the carbs, did a lot of mechanical work on it, replaced the seat and the windshield. And this is fun. This is where I go to escape. This is where I go to kind of be on my own. Or to unwind. I love this kind of thing. And then this here is our newest. We bought this for like $150 a few weeks ago. It's a vintage racing cart. And we haven't dug into this much, other than my son is. We've got it to where my son can ride it around a bit. We've got some work to do on the carb. But this is fun. This is what I do to kind of get my juices flowing. I'm a builder. I'm a creator. And so what's fascinating about this is somebody said to me recently. They said, Kurt, if you weren't such a tightwad, and you'd spend like a couple hundred more bucks, you could actually get something that's ride ready. You wouldn't even have to work on it. And I said, well, that's true. But see, for me, that misses half of the experience. Because for me, I love taking things that, were created for a very specific purpose, had a very specific intention in mind, but over the years, they've been jaded a bit, they've been kind of thrashed and worn down, and are almost at the end of their life, and then rebuilding them and taking them to a place where they're usable again. And so the writing is only part of the experience and the journey for us. It's the entire process. And so that's what we're hoping is happening for every single one of us as we're going through this journey, as we're tapping into our God-given purpose and we're uncovering some of the things that have jaded that or covered that up along the way. And so let me pray for us as we go after that today. Heavenly Father, we thank you that we can come into this dark room on a beautiful Sunday morning. There's so many places we could be right now. And God, we're all here because we're seeking after something. And so God, I just pray that you would meet us in that place that we're at today, as only you can do. God, there's been really cool things happening in people's lives this weekend, and we just trust that's going to continue to happen in this moment today. And so God, just speak to us in that still small voice. Continue to remind us who we are. And God, I just pray that everything that happens in here would go to that end today. And God, I just pray these things according to your name and your power and your character, Jesus. Amen. Amen. Well, this is why I love this whole process of journeying. Every year we do this 6-week journey in the fall because, it really isn't just about getting to the end point, the destination. It's about the process. It's about the encounters we have, the experiences we have along the way. And so today we're going to continue our look at Moses. We looked at Moses last week, or Charlton Heston, however you like to refer to him as. And Moses is a central figure in the Old Testament portion of the Bible. And he's a guy who's Jewish. He's Hebrew, and yet he's being raised in an Egyptian culture. And on top of that, he's adopted. And so he's in the midst of this massive identity crisis. Is he a slave or is he a prince? He's living in the home of the leader of the nation of Egypt. He's been adopted into that home. Is he royalty or is he not royalty? Is he Pharaoh's grandson or is he Pharaoh's greatest enemy? And so he's in this massive identity crisis, and one day something snaps in him. Something just snaps, and it's as he's seen this Egyptian taskmaster just beating and eventually killing a Hebrew slave. And so something in Moses' identity breaks, and he lashes out, and he kills this Egyptian. And so, I think he goes back to his core identity right here, kind of back to his born identity as a Hebrew or as a fellow Jew, and he's trying to defend his fellow Hebrews. And then sometime later, just a few days later, I think, he stumbles across another set of Hebrew men, this time fighting, and here's what it says. It says, when they went out the next day, behold, the two Hebrews were struggling together. He said to the man in the wrong, why do you strike your companion? He answered, who made you prince and judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Then Moses was afraid and thought, surely this thing I did is known. When Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian, this place he had fled to. I don't know if you've ever had one of those moments where, you know, you're in the midst of something really difficult and somebody throws out like a cliche phrase. You just remind yourself that cliche phrase never land well, right? I mean, those things never really work. We reach back. We're looking for something to say. Most of the time when these come out, I mean, they just don't sit well. I'd rather you run your fingers down a chalkboard while I eat the chalk, all right? I mean, that's just how bad they usually are. And so this one that just kind of usually gets at the core of me, and it's usually said by really well spiritually meaning people, but they'll say something like, well, you just remember, God will never give anything to you beyond what you're able to handle. It's almost like they're saying, Kurt, you know, buck up. You're not handling this very well. Remember, God knows what you can handle. He'll never give you more than what you can handle. And in my mind, I just think that's absolutely not true. It's totally, totally nonsense. There's no truth to that whatsoever. And we're going to unpack that here in a bit. And so the big idea I want us to see today is that God will call you beyond your comfort zone. God actually will call you beyond what you feel like you're capable of doing. He will call you to things that you feel right now are impossible. He will call you to things that you feel you're incapable of in and of your own power. And the reason he calls us there is because that's where we need God. That's where God actually shows up. All right? And so as we're continuing to try to lean into our identity, it is not in that place that is our comfort spot, just so you know. All right, it's only when God puts us in places that go beyond our capabilities, and when that moment along with God's power kind of intersect, it's like, bam, all of a sudden, there's something really potent happening in that moment. And so, you know, I really wonder if you're up for what God may want to do in your life. We're almost halfway through the journey, and you have to ask that question. Am I up for the possibility of what God might want to do in my life, in my marriage, in my family, in my career? Because, see, Moses isn't. He's not at all. Moses is not in on what God has for him. This is one of the reasons I love snowmobiles. I grew up with snowmobiles in Michigan. I used to ride these every night after I got home from school. And even this machine, even though I'm pretty seasoned on snowmobiles, this thing is way beyond my capacity right here. I mean, my capabilities, I'm pretty good, but this thing can scream. I mean, it goes up to 100 miles an hour in the speedometer. I've not had it that fast, but you know, this thing pushes me. I try to go further than I've ever gone before, go deeper into the woods than I've ever gone. I try to take corners and navigate certain things in ways that I've not done before because I'm constantly trying to improve and get better. And so this is just kind of a physical representation of what I believe God is wanting to do in our spiritual lives. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, do I want, you know, what God has in store for me? Do you want, you know, all the possibilities that God has, or do we just want to rest in what we know and what's comfortable and we feel that we're capable of? And so Moses flees to this area known as Midian as soon as he gets pushed outside his comfort zone, and he encounters this burning bush. Here's what it says about this in Exodus chapter 3. It says, now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian, and he led his flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Oreb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. Look at that again. The bush was burning, yet it was not consumed. Now, theologians, they find this really fascinating, but the miracle here isn't that the bush is burning. All right, that's not the miracle. This is Midian. This is like a desert-like area. It would not have been uncommon to see a burning bush in this community. What's crazy, the miracle here, is that the bush is burning, and yet it's not getting smaller. It's not being consumed. It's not burning up. That's the miracle. That's the crazy thing going on right here. And what's even more fascinating is we don't know how long the bush was burning. I mean, was it burning for an hour? Was it burning for like an entire afternoon? Was it burning for a week or a couple weeks or a month? Was it burning for 6 months? We don't know. All we know is it was burning long enough to get Moses' attention, where he goes, oh, the bush, it's burning. Look at this bush has been burning and it's not getting consumed. It's not getting smaller. This is the moment when Moses notices that there's something crazy going on with this bush. You know what I think? I think that there's things in your life. There's burning bushes that have been going on that you're just not noticing. I think there's things that God may be doing that he's been preparing for you. God, things that God continues to bring over and over into your life, preparing you for something and you haven't even noticed. I know for me, there's so many things that I do with repetition now, and it's only because of the repetition that I do these things in that my confidence has grown in them. And many of them are things that were burning bushes for me, things that were constantly kind of there. God continued to bring into my life, I just didn't notice them. And in fact, one of those things is speaking, what I'm doing right now. I speak now 3 times a weekend, on Thursday nights, 2 times on Sunday. And so that's a big part of my job. I kind of speak for a living now. And a lot of people, they say to me, they're like, man, I'm so glad I don't have your job. I get nervous when I speak in front of people. You know, and I'm like, I do too, or I used to. I know exactly how you feel. I used to get nervous every time I'd have to get up and speak in front of anybody. And the reason is because I was so bad at it. And I'm not great today, by the way. I've grown a little, but I was so bad. In fact, I have dreams still. Actually, they're nightmares, really. I have nightmares about getting in front of people like you, and I don't know what to say. That I don't have anything insightful to share, and my iPad's gone. This is kind of my roadmap right here. I even have one nightmare. It happens about every 6 months where I'm in front of a podium, and it's not here because I don't speak in front of a podium here, but I'm standing behind this podium without any pants on, and I'm like, where are my pants? And I'm running back, you know, backstage looking for my pants, and don't meditate on that for too long, all right? That'll distract us, but it's a nightmare. And I think these things come because this is one of the things that God has brought as a burning bush into my life. And people even, you know, will ask me now, do you still get nervous? And I don't get nervous anymore. I used to get really nervous. I get anxious. I'm sitting over here, I can't wait to get up. I have a hard time sleeping the night before a weekend service because I live in whatever we're talking about that weekend, and I get excited as I'm praying for what God's going to do as we look at that particular thing, because usually it's something that's had massive impact on my life. And so I get very excited and anxious, so it's changed a bit for me. But nonetheless, this whole speaking thing is a burning bush that never was consumed. And it started back in high school. In fact, my junior year of high school, I lost one of my close friends, a guy by the name of Brad, in a car accident. He died. He was a teammate of mine. He was a friend of mine. And my dad was a pastor. He did Brad's funeral. About a week later, they did a kind of a convocation memorial service on our school campus, and we planted a tree in Brad's honor. And for whatever reason, some of the student leaders asked me to share at this convocation thing. And I thought, well, I don't do that. That's what my dad does. I'm 16. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what to say. And so I just wrote a few things down of remembering what it was like to play with Brad and the leader that he was, and I connected a few scriptures to it. And I didn't know what I was doing, but it landed with people. And so about a year later, I was a senior in high school. I got asked to share at this breakfast for a bunch of local athletes and coaches before school one morning. A whole bunch of guys I compete against in baseball, basketball. And I don't know why I got selected. I didn't even know what to say. So what did I do? I went to the one sports reference in the Bible where Paul's talking about running a race. And I wasn't a runner, but I decided, you know, there's some concepts here. So I talked about, you know, God, you know, he wants us to run this race and do our best and bring our best and bring our A game and to finish strong. And there's a prize at the end. And again, I didn't know what I was doing. But after that, a bunch of my teammates and some of the guys I played against from other schools, even coaches, were like, man, Kurt, that was really, you know, impactful for me. And they had no idea the Bible could actually be relevant to life. And so I had moments in college, you know, where this burning bush continued to present itself. And listen, it was not because I had mad skills, in case you're wondering, all right? I was terrible. My freshman, like, speech 101 freshman speech class, horrendous, all right? I mean, horrendous. My first speech topic was talking about a landfill. I don't know how I got it. I don't know if I drew it out of a hat, but my speech was 3 minutes, and it was horrendous. My wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, I practiced in front of her. My grandmother lived in town. I practiced in front of her. They both just nodded. You know, it was terrible. Julie was, she's like in a panic attack the entire time I was in class because she knew how bad it was. All right, so it's not that I had good skills. In fact, it wasn't until I was like 25 and I was a youth pastor and I was up on a ski retreat weekend with about 50 students from our youth group. We'd do these ski retreat weekends and then I have to put like 4 talks together for the weekend. And one evening after the Saturday night kind of service, and I gave this one of the talks to the kids, a couple of my adult team, volunteer team, came up and asked to talk to me. And they said, Kurt, we see something in you that we don't think you see in yourself. Because, see, I was always asking, hey, how was it? Was it good? I don't feel like I know what I'm doing. And they're like, you know, not only is this moving kids, but it's actually really impacting our lives as well. And all of a sudden, it hit me. This is a burning bush, and yet it's not going away. And so I still use my voice today. I've used my voice to champion things here at Crosspoint, to challenge people to try things they've never tried before, to go beyond what you feel you're capable of, to get involved in serving, to get into a journey group. I mean, there's still time to get in a journey group. I tell you what, you will grow immensely more if you're in a small group community with a bunch of other people. You need to get into a group. See, this is the burning bush, one of them. God has just continued to put it in my life, and yet for so long I didn't see it, and yet it did not burn up. And I've just realized along the way, this is a God thing. This is totally not a me thing. This is not about my skills, all right? I mean, I need to hone my craft, and I continue to try to do that. I need to, you know, continue to lean into my giftedness, but this was a God thing. See, for Moses, Moses refuses to see what God is doing in his life. And I hope you're beginning to see that in Moses' life as we look at this. See, he refuses to the point to where at one point God goes to Moses and like audibly says to Moses, Moses, here's what you're going to do. You're going to lead this group of people out of slavery to this free place, and that's your role. And Moses continues to reject it. In fact, here's how it's put in Exodus 3. It says, and then he said, this is God talking, I am the God of your father, God of Abraham, God of Isaac, God of Jacob. He's reminding him, I've been with all of your family, and you're the next one I'm with. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of a land to a good and broad place. Let me just pause here for a moment. If you're here this morning and you're just thinking, man, does God ever hear my cries? If there's something going on in your life, maybe even in the I Am journey where you're feeling like there's so much stuff in my life that's covered up the real me, just take a hint from right here that God hears your cries. All right? He sees what's going on. He says, come, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I? Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? But he said to them, this is God speaking, he said, but I will be with you. Moses, I will be with you. It's a really odd thing right here. Right? God continues to tell Moses over and over again, Moses, here's what you're going to do. Here's how you're planning to be used. You're going to take this group of people who are in bondage and slavery, and you're going to help their entire lives go up and to the right, and you're going to be the one that's the catalyst of this happening. And you'd think Moses would be like, oh my word, God thinks I can do this? Remember, if you don't know much about Moses, Moses has a stuttering problem. He has a speech problem. You'd think he'd be going, oh my word, God thinks I can do this? But instead, Moses is like, well, God, who am I? Who am I to go do this? And let me just tell you, this is not humility right here on Moses' behalf. In fact, this isn't even healthy spirituality. This is unhealthy spirituality. This is a lack of confidence. This is a lack of a belief in God. All right? God is saying to Moses, here's what you're going to do. And Moses actually doesn't believe God. He's like, well, Who am I? God, I don't think I have the ability to do what you think I can do. And God's like, Moses, I will help you. I will help you. Tell them that I am sent you. Now Moses, what's he saying? He's like, who am I? And God's like, I am. That's who I am. I'm going to send you. See, this is why the I Am journey is called what it is. It's not, I mean, we've been trying to self-discover, you know, I am blank. We've been trying to fill in the blank, right? I am a ruler. I am an increaser. I'm a builder. I'm a child of God, a son of God, a daughter of God. All those things are true, and it's important that we continue to understand those. But see, all of this is really pinned into the very identity of God. Whereas Moses says, God, who are you? And what does God say? He says, I am. Not I am blank. He says, I am. Now, this is fascinating because this means that God is sovereignly independent of all creation. See, everything else you will ever see, touch, feel, you know, my snowmobile, this go-kart, any seeds you put in the ground this spring, you pushed into the ground, it popped up as a flower, it's starting to wither and die now. All of these things had beginning points. Your life has a beginning point. Right? Eventually we'll have an ending point, and then there's the eternity issue. But see, God, he just is. He says, no one even knows. I'm so vast that no one knows the beginnings of my origins. I tell you what, if I was Moses and God said that, I'm like, all right, I'm in. You win, whatever you say. I mean, if that's who you are and you're going to be with me. But that's not the way it is with Moses. He has massive doubts. And so God's kind of like, all right, Moses, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to allow you to do miracles. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you some really cool miracles. He's like, do this. Put your hand in your cloak, take it back out, and it's leprous. He says, put it back into your cloak, take it out again, and it's healed. How about that? Do you want that one in your back pocket so you can just be assured that I'm with you? I was like, yeah, it's pretty cool, but that doesn't do it for me. Okay, well, how about this one? He's like, take your staff, that staff you got in your hand, throw it on the ground, boom, it becomes a snake. And then he says to Moses, reach down and grab that snake. Now, I'm not sure how long this part of the conversation took, all right? Because for me, I would have been like, all right, God, I need a little more than just reach down and grab it, all right? But for Moses, throw it on the ground, it became a snake. He says, reach down and grab that snake, and immediately it became a staff again. He's like, how about that? Moses is like, that's pretty cool. But yeah, it doesn't do it for me. See, Moses, I mean, who wouldn't have loved to have those two tricks in their back pocket? Who wouldn't have loved to have access to this kind of power in their lives? And yet Moses, he declines. And this all kind of comes to a head when Moses finally just says to God, he's like, oh, please, my Lord, please, please, please find somebody else. Wow, can you believe that? He's like, find somebody else. I mean, he's seeing God. He's hearing God. God's telling him, here's what you're going to do. Here's the crazy things I'm going to put at your disposal. And Moses goes, I think I'm out. God looks around, probably out of frustration. I don't know why he keeps going with Moses, but he does. He says, okay, Aaron, here's a guy in your tribe named Aaron. Aaron's great at speech. Moses, you're worried about your speech. How about I give Aaron to you to help be the voice for the Hebrew nation? Now, this is kind of weird to me. I'm going to be honest with you. Because see, on one hand, this is a total lack of faith on Moses' behalf, right? It's just enabling Moses to be a bigger and bigger weenie is what that's doing, right? To not require him to step in to what God wants him to do. And yet on the other hand, he's learning about what it means to operate in community. He's learning what it means to have a partner, to operate in tandem on a project, which we know that there's a potency that comes when we work with other people. And so what's fascinating about this is I don't know that you and I mean, we look at this story, but I don't know that you and I would have done things any differently, right? I mean, we think, we're like, well, man, I would have definitely followed God if he would have said this to me. I don't know if you would have. I don't know if I would have. I mean, Moses is at a crisis of faith right here. You and I, so many times when it comes to leaning into our identity, we're at a crisis of faith. And we use that phrase I mentioned earlier, that cliche phrase. Well, just remember, God won't give you anything beyond what you can handle. And we use that to kind of enable our weeniness, right? I mean, we use that to be like, oh, I'm not going to step into that because that seems bigger and I don't think God would want me to take that on. Well, let me connect the dots on that passage for you for just a moment. This comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And this is the Apostle Paul talking right here. He's talking to a whole bunch of new Christians in this Mediterranean area where he's planting new churches. And so he writes to them to encourage them. And here's what he says. He says, no temptation has overcome you that is not common to man. God is faithful and he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. So this verse is talking about temptation to sin. It's not talking about the purpose for you in my life. See, this verse is saying if you're tempted to lie, or if you're tempted to slander someone, or if you just are angry and you're like, can you believe so-and-so? You're gossiping about somebody. This talks about how often God is going to interrupt that thought and give you a different thought so you can choose to go a different direction. This means that if you're tempted to go do online pornography, you're going to be surprised how many times somebody comes knocking on the door. You're going to be surprised how many times the Wi-Fi cuts out and cuts your connection. Because what he's saying is there's different times where God intervenes to help us. He interrupts us. And if there's not an interruption, then he's going to give you strength to endure the temptation. We can probably all think of times when we saw some kind of temptation and we're like, oh gosh, I hope I never have to endure that one because I will lose with that one. Well, not exactly. Because God says right here, Paul's telling us that he's either going to give us a way out or he's going to give us strength to get through it. But see, this is not what the I Am journey is all about. It's not about not doing the wrong things. The I Am journey is about leaning into the right things. It's about leaning into the power and the possibilities of God. It's about allowing his power to be coursing through our veins because we're so in line with who he created us to be, and we're stepping beyond our comfort zone into the places where we've got to rely on God's power to show up. And he says, this is the place where you live a great, great life. See, this is why I love snowmobiles. This is why I love go-karts. It's why I love things with motors on them, because this is where I can get pushed. This is where I can try things. I can go beyond what I feel like I'm capable of. There's some ramifications if I miss. I might hit the wall, might get stuck, might get stranded. I can remember, you know, going through my machine and making sure I've got, you know, like a safety blanket. I remember, you know, at times, you know, not having an emergency kit with me. I mean, tools, spark plugs, all the things you need. I mean, I remember as a 12, 13-year-old, I remember strapping on my suit, you know, loading up on a snowmobile with maybe one of my friends, and we'd be 12, 15, 20 miles from home. We're always trying to go a little further. And it's dark, and that's in a time of no cell phones. I mean, my parents, they didn't know what we were doing. They just knew we were out somewhere. And there was a few times, more than a few times, as I'm putting my helmet on, I remember thinking, gosh, I wonder if tonight's going to be the night. I wonder if as we try to go, you know, to that next river that we've never been to before, if something bad's going to happen. I wonder if tonight, you know, I'm gonna run into a fence post. I wonder if tonight's the night where something's going to go, you know, contrary to the way that I want it to be. And that's always the case when we're pushing, when we're going beyond what we know. This is why this physical representation of what happens on these is so similar to what we go through in the spiritual journey. In fact, this past week, I invited a few of my friends, a few guys from my men's group, some of our staff, to go on a racing encounter. And it's not the time of year for this, so we got in some of these. Now, not this one, but we went out to K1 Speed this last week. And basically, most of these guys are new to racing. And so I got them together, and I said, hey, would you guys be willing to go on an experience where I'm going to coach you, I'm going to push you a bit, I'm going to kind of give you the ins and outs. I've done a lot of racing, but I want you to push yourself beyond what you feel like you're capable of doing. I want you to, you know, you're going to try some things. It's not going to work. You're going to slam the wall. It's going to hurt. You know, you're going to get like blood blisters from the seatbelt on your chest. That's all part of the experience, all right? That's what makes it so fun. And so, you know, so we did this, and they tried it, and they pushed, and they learned some things. And the bigger thing was we wanted to see if it uncovered any burning bushes in our lives. Or maybe there's something there, but there's certain things that have happened in our life that prevent us from going further. And so I want to show you a bit of what happened with us this week as we went on this encounter, because there might be a connection in here for you. So you ready for it? You want to take a look at this? All right, here we go. Take a look at the screens. Are we ready to do this today?
All right, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm Matt. I don't have much racing experience. Certainly nothing this fast, so this ought to be an interesting experience, but I'm really excited to get out there and try it today.
Jack. Where am I looking? I'm looking right there, right? Hey everybody, I'm Scott, and I've been out here to K1 four or five times now. I'm a much better runner than I'm a driver, so it ought to be really interesting for everybody else that I'm sharing the track with, so looking forward to getting out there today.
I am Angelo Brown, and first time racer, and I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm excited. Looking forward to it.
Hey everybody, I'm Coy, and I have zero experience racing other than Mario Kart, so we'll see what happens. I'm ready to go.
Hey everyone, I'm John Long. I've been 225 mile an hour in a dragster, but I've never been very good at turning corners. So this is going to be a new experience for me. I've been here a couple times, and I seem to get slower as I go. So this is going to be a challenge.
Hey, my name's Kurt, and I have spent way too much money racing like this. So we're going to get after it today, have some fun. Let's do it.
There is calming, there is storming, there is teasing, there is warning, there is loving, we are torn, oh Lord. There's a void, there's a song, there's a death, we are born, there is loving, we are born.
turns and you got, you know, somebody in front of you trying to, you know, get around them.
I know I punted somebody and I feel bad about it. No, not really. I got over it.
Nice and smooth on the RPN. Yeah.
Hey, it's Scott right here. We're about ready to get out there and race. I am really, really slow, and there's a big guy. He's really fast, but I'm going to catch him today. I'm going to go around him. I'm going to pass him, and I'm winning this race today. Not Scott.
If you're free, prove it. If you're not loose, or chains on your soul, come freedom.
Seventh to fourth.
The second race, I pretty much hit everything in sight.
So I was last in the first race, and I was number six in the second race. So I'm moving up in the world.
All right, guys, so we just stepped off the track, and I asked you guys to push yourselves, and you did push yourselves. I think every one of us, you know, tried things. We were trying to go beyond what we felt like we were able to do. And so what surprised you as you began to really get comfortable getting outside what you knew this afternoon?
I'm generally not a risk taker, but you put a helmet on and a little speed and all of a sudden it's amazing what your environment will do in terms of the risk that you will take. And I think that surprised me more than anything. It's like, yeah, it doesn't take much to get the blood flowing and get you excited about something. And when you get excited about something, sometimes you make moves you shouldn't make.
But sometimes you also make moves you should make.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Know, with that excitement, with that kind of encouragement, you know, from each and every one of us, you know, trying to go out there. But, you know, yes, you do make maybe some judgmental mistakes here and there, but at the same time, there are times that we, you know, made that gun to go do the right thing and get around whoever we needed to.
First race, you know, it was fun, gentlemanly. And then the second race, you know, I thought, I'm ready. I hit everything in sight. I went backwards, you know, and so I guess you got to kind of step back and control your emotions a little bit. And sometimes you got to go slow to go fast.
In the first race, that caution showed. I mean, you know, and second time I hit the wall a couple times because I was trying to push myself a little more. I felt good about it, but definitely not satisfied. We said this is a personal best. This is not, it's not a competition between us. But who am I kidding? It really is a competition, if you will. Even between brothers, it's still a competition, right? And, I mean, so, you know, because who wants to be on the bottom of the list? Oh, I was on the bottom once.
but is it a competition, or is it you naturally want to get better when you see other guys doing, you know, when you see somebody excelling past you, you want to get better, right? I mean, it's not just the competition, it's you want to get to where they're at.
Let's just say, you don't, life is about, in my view, sometimes wrong or right, not being on the bottom sometimes. I mean, and that's, you're trying to move up the rung. I mean, who doesn't really try to move up, whether it's in the office, whether it's, you know, your job or wherever you are, I mean, you try to move up a little bit. I think that's hunger.
The pregame talk with you was huge because I found myself doing things out there and talking to people who had done it before you. For instance, if you're trying something new, it reminded me how important it is to go talk to somebody who's been there before, learn from their mistakes and their successes. The second race, I let John go out in front of me because he's an experienced driver. And I was like, okay, the only way I'm going to get better is if I try to get behind somebody and follow somebody that's been there. And so it was fun to try to follow his line. And you know, in the things that we're doing in our life, I think it's just really important to find people who have been there before, who have the same passion that you have, who have been really successful, maybe had hit some of the pitfalls that you're trying to avoid as well, and have some really open, honest, vulnerable conversations. If you want to go to the next level personally or professionally, it's important to go talk to those folks and be okay saying, I don't have all the answers. Teach me.
So, you know, most of us were, this was a newer experience. I mean, you raced a few times. You know, was there a voice in your head? I mean, did you have anything that told you, oh gosh, be afraid? Was there anything that was causing you to be hesitant at any point?
Obviously, we've gotten direction. You guys have both kind of raced before. You've done this before. You know, but I think even in life that you have to be able to, one, get direction and take it, but then put it into how it relates to yourself. You know, you've got to be able to make those decisions. You've got to be able to take what you know, take how you're going, and then kind of tweak it to your own way of doing it.
It's really just the fear of the unknown. I'd never done it before. And so I had no idea, didn't know the turns, didn't know where I was supposed to brake, when I was supposed to push the gas. And so never done it before. I am competitive, so I wanted to go out there and do, but I didn't know what to expect. So it's just really that fear of unknown. You know, I didn't know what was going to happen, how guy scared me with all these rules, and so I was a little hesitant. I was laying on the brakes heavy in the first race, and then once I got the hang of it, then I got a little more comfortable.
With the first race, I was doing everything I could to follow kind of the coaching you gave us at the beginning, and I'm literally about to wrap up the best race I've ever had here, and I spun my car in the last lap. So it was a great reminder that, man, even though when things are going really, really well, you're gonna have a hiccup every now and then, and it's okay. You just gotta, you know, push your car off the wall and get going. And so it was a good reminder that you know, your setbacks happen,
yeah.
And buck up and move on.
To take that a step further, would you have, you know, would it have been satisfying to you to have not pushed yourself?
No, there's no way I was taking my foot off the gas. I mean, so it was worth the risk to spin out, but. Yeah, there was no shot that I was gonna just play it safe in that environment. Like when your things are going well, you just wanna continue. You think, let's just keep doing what I'm doing. This is going well. And sometimes when you get in that groove, it's easy to lose focus a little bit. And I think that's, and it doesn't take much of a loss of focus for you to spin your car out and on that track or whatever you're doing in, with your family or in life or whatever. So it was just a nice reminder to be, it's okay to keep your foot on the gas, but you gotta keep focused.
So, you know, we're in the IAM journey and we're learning things about ourselves. What did we learn today? I mean, what did you learn? I mean, this is not life, but this is something that really mirrors life. And what do we learn as we're continuing through this journey about ourselves, about maybe moves that we need to make, something from our past that might be really impacting our ability to think that we're capable of doing something?
We have to be aware of there's a lot more to us than maybe what we're giving ourselves credit for. And to push us to a point of where we spin out or hit the wall a little bit, but to, you have to find that and then learn from that and progress from that. But I think if we sit on the sidelines and don't push ourselves to that point, you never know where you're at in life.
K1's been here for a while, and I've never even had interest in coming over here and racing. Racing's never been a big thing for me. I sleep through the Indy 500. I mean, it's not a big thing.
Gosh, you're killing two of us. Three of us.
What's wrong with you?
I mean, I did one time. That's all I need. But I mean. It's been here, I've been missing out, and so that's the kind of thing. I never even, you know, I didn't think I'd be good at it, and so it was never an interest to me to come give it a shot. But see, I'm missing out, so I think if you don't put yourself out there, if you don't take a risk and do things, then maybe you might fail. It might happen, but if you don't give it a shot, you could miss out on a pretty cool opportunity, and I would have if we didn't get a chance to do this today, so.
Find whatever it is that can make you want to press the gas a little bit harder. Take a risk every now and then that you're not, you know, that you aren't so scared to put the car on the wall every now and then.
If you replace fear with passion,
yeah,
it could take you to whole new heights,
yeah,
to places that you never would think you could be. And you know, it's just taking that first step. Just us walking in here, I think, was the first step.
Man, we had a lot of cool learnings this week as we came out of that. Guys are still talking about it. Let's thank these guys for putting themselves out there. Man, they're willing to put some time in and just talk and Connect Life. And, you know, I tried to be a bit of a leader with these guys. I tried to, you know, coach them. I tried to push them, challenge them, encourage them to go, you know, beyond, again, what they felt like they were comfortable doing. And I encourage you to do that with people in your life. This is how we grow. And, you know, Moses does cross over. He eventually, you know, stops being just about himself, and he gets to being about what God is about. And many of us, we need to start crossing over. All right, we're making the turn into the halfway point of the journey, and we've been exploring the question, I am blank. I am this, I am that. And we're going to continue exploring that. We're going to continue the self-exploring, you know, questions and exercises. But in order to be the best version of who you were created to be, you've got to get into the one who created you. It's not just saying, okay, who am I? But it's leaning into the very identity of the one who put you into place. And so this week, we're gonna continue to give you exercises in the app through some of your individual work. You're going to work on week 3 in the individual guide. And you're going to process through some things that only God, only Jesus can do for you. And if we don't get into that, then we're relying in and of our own selves. And I don't know about you, but I don't have what I need or what I need to go to that place that's beyond where I am right now. So I encourage you to lean into these experiences, hang in there, keep doing the exercises. These things are all a part of the journey, and they're going to continue to shape you and uncover the real identity that you're going to be leaning into, including what we're going to do right now. So let's go ahead and stand to our feet. We're going to sing, and we're going to sing a couple songs, and this is really putting our hearts and our mouths together to, one, say something to God, but also as we sing, oftentimes God says something to us. And so we're looking, we're waiting, we're listening for that still small voice. And God will continue to bring clarity to your experience and trying to figure out who you are. So let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, we thank you again for this time. We thank you that you are a God who communicates with us. God, not only do you want to hear from us, not only do you notice where we are and what we're going through, and not only do you know our capabilities and our capacities, but God, you call us well beyond those. Because that's the place where we encounter you. And so, God, we want that. We want to be in that place. We may not know exactly what that looks like today, but we just pray that you will continue to make that clear. And, God, give us the courage to lean into it. And, God, for some of us, we may be here today for the first time. We don't even know why we showed up today. But maybe you're wanting to show us something. Maybe there's a burning bush in our life, something that just keeps surfacing that you're wanting us to take notice of. Maybe for the first time, we're going to just open ourselves up to you. Our hearts being strangely warm to you and a relationship with you. And we've never had that before. And yet, it's closer than we can ever imagine. And it starts by us just simply saying, Jesus, yes, I want that. I want to receive you. I want to know you. I want to know my purpose. I want to know your grace. I want to know the fullness of life that you created me for. And then just let him begin to build that into you. Because Jesus invites us into this relationship. He invites us to the altar of the place where we encounter him and where we experience him.